The Ambitious Radio Network. Conversations with ambitious entrepreneurs and thought leaders. Are you an entrepreneur, startup junkie, or just someone interested in improving their leadership skills? If you're looking to be motivated, inspired, and uncover what it takes to get to the next level, listening to Ambitious Radio will be well worth the investment of your time. We have weekly engaging conversations with today's most influential thought leaders and entrepreneurs as they discuss their successes, failures, tipping points, and other priceless information that you can apply immediately after listening. Now, here's your host, Doug Parker.
All right, welcome back to Ambitious Radio. And my goodness, guys, today I am so excited. We have a guest coming back on the show that is probably one of my favorite guests we've ever had. We've got Andy Andrews back on the show, and he went from being homeless to a New York Times best-selling author and one of the most influential people in America. Andy's books and strategies have been used by the last nine college football national championship teams, the U.S. Special Operations community, many companies, both large and small, as well as the NFL, NBA, MLB, elected officials from every party to improve their performance and effectiveness. Andy, welcome back to the show, sir. How are you?
Good, Doug. How are you, buddy?
Well, I'll tell you what, I am so excited. I'm humbled. You know, in the pre-show, we were chatting just a little bit, and you were talking about how you're flying around, and you're going to have to go to New York and talk to Robin Roberts and then fly back to Dallas and talk to Glenn Beck. And then here I am, Doug Parker, and interviewing somebody that's being interviewed by those guys. It's crazy.
Hey, listen, I have a lot of fun talking to you, man. This is obviously not the first time we have talked. And so, you know, it's just I'm like anybody else. When you get off and you have done an interview with somebody and you go, well, you know, one day we may want to have them back on or something. I mean, when I get off, my assistant says, how's it going? I say, put them on my A-list, because if they call, I'll do anything they want to do. And you are on my A-list, buddy.
Well, thank you so much for that. I really enjoy, you know, listening, and I was so excited. We're going to get into your new book coming out. I was so excited to hear about the new book and the little things. And I was able to download a couple of the chapters. And if you don't mind, I'd like to, if our listeners would like to download that, there's a way they can do that, right? Is it okay for me to announce that?
Yeah, please.
Okay, so Andy's new book, you can text the word little to, it's 33444, is that correct?
Yep.
Okay, so you just text the word little to 33444, and it'll send you a little text link, and you kind of reply back, and you can download the first three chapters, which I've done that, and they're just unbelievable. I can't wait to read the entire book and go through it. It's just such practical information. But what I'd like to do is we're going to change up the show just a little bit this go-around, because it's the second time you've been on, and I'd like to know just a little bit more about your childhood. And I know, you know, you had it sounded like a really good childhood, and then you had some tragedy, you know, in your kind of teen years, and then wound up being homeless. But can you share a little information just about that time of your life?
Yeah, I mean, you get specific. Just ask me whatever you want to ask me. Dig in, and I'll answer whatever you want to ask. I mean, generally, I was born at a very early age, and so from that, from that, what do you want to know?
Well, so I heard, you know, you were raised, and I remember listening to something somewhere. It may have been a YouTube video or something, researching. You were talking about going to church one time, and you did the Amazing Grace, and you were singing that in church. Tell us about that story.
Yeah, my dad was a minister. He was a minister, and I grew up in the in the church, and we did. We had a very normal family. My dad was a great dad. My mom was a great mom. My sister was there. And so it was a normal thing, but I was kind of the odd person in the group. But and I say that because I have what I consider, I suppose, parallel thinking. You know, I see the same things everybody sees, and I hear the same thing everybody hears, but it just means something different to me. And it's why my, you know, parents thought I was an odd little child, I suppose, because, you know, my mother would say, you know, don't play with that stick, it'll poke your eye out. Well, I'm 6 years old, and I'm thinking, you can't poke your eye out with a stick. You can poke it in, poke it out, you got to run it up through your nose. And so I was always seeing something a little bit different, and my dad had asked me, "You can go on YouTube and see this. Actually, if you do on the internet, if you do Andy Andrews Facebook Amazing Grace, Andy Andrews Facebook Amazing Grace, just you know, in a search engine, you'll see this whole story." But I was a little kid, and my dad asked me to do Amazing Grace on a Sunday morning, and I had somehow seen that Amazing Grace would fit into the words would fit perfectly into the tunes of other songs. And so as I started this, I was working my way toward a spanking with my dad.
So yeah, it's a great video, and I'll put a link to it on the show notes for the page, and of course Andy will have two pages on the show, so it'll be the episode number two. But it really is hilarious as he goes through that. And so, you know, you said you got a great childhood, you're brought up kind of normal for all intents and purposes, and then, you know, tragedy strikes. Your parents passed away at, was it about 19?
Yeah, I was 19, and my mom died of cancer. My dad was killed in a car accident the same year. And so this was a crazy time. You know, I've always had the ability, though, to take a bad situation and make it worse. And I did. Yeah, I made some bad choices at the time, and ended up literally homeless before that was even a word. You know, 35 years ago, nobody was talking about homeless people, but I was living under a pier on the Gulf Coast and in and out of people's garages, which is not safe or smart. But it was a crazy time. I met this old guy there late at night, one night under my pier, scared me to death. But he was the first person really, he came into my life, first person ever to tell me the truth about myself. And when I say that, a lot of times people think, well, what does that mean? Well, you know, when you meet somebody having a hard time, what do we do? A lot of times we will, you know, put an arm around them, or we'll give them $5, or we'll give them, you know, a hamburger or something. But rarely do we sit down with them and tell them things about themselves that might make them angry at us. And that's kind of what he did. And so people say, so he made you mad? Oh, yeah, like constantly, you know, because he was always, you know, picking out, I guess, little things and like turning my thinking around. You know, usually with friends or acquaintances, people manage to kind of agree and just kind of just go along and go, yeah, 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 even if they don't agree. But he wouldn't. And he would kind of stop me and say, well, you know, I think you're steering yourself into a ditch with that thought. And it was pretty funny the way he would teach me things. And one of the things that he said quite often that I have come to rely on in my life, he said, look, boy, you can't always believe everything you think.
That is powerful. So you can't always believe everything you think.
Now, that has such great application, Doug, you know, because, it's, you know, obviously it's obvious that when we are wrong about something that we need to search for the correct answer. But I've found in the past number of years that advice, you can't believe everything you think, that also applies to people who are in first place and people who are teaching other people. That applies to all of us. And if you look from a business point of view, you know, people say, you know, let's say a business or a coach or a team, somebody's in 10th place. Well, if you're in 10th place, it's pretty obvious to you that there are people who know more than you know about what you're doing. And so you tend to try to learn from them, and you tend to watch them and try to do what they do and try to figure out why they're doing what they're doing and how that's working. And you know, you can draw up into 8th place and then 5th place and then 4th place and 3rd place. And then that rise becomes slower. And then you're running neck and neck with them. And finally, maybe you end up in first place. Well, at first place, instead of looking up, most first place people are kind of looking down. They're watching their heels. You know, they're making sure nobody's gaining on them. But they're not looking up. They're not looking to gain ground because there's no ground to gain in their mind because they're in first place. And so the usually companies and teams, people that are in first and second place, they don't have great, huge leaps of success. And you know, this the new book that I've worked with that I brought out, called, and it's called The Little Things, Why You Really Should Sweat the Small Stuff. That book really is my, I guess, my way of describing what I've done with companies and teams over the past several years, because it is an invisible gap almost that hovers above the heads of people who are doing really well. You know, people whose families are peaceful or people whose finances are good, they tend to think that, okay, that everything that they've done, everything that they think that is working at the optimum, optimum process. And yet there is more. And so Jones, you know, this old man, we called him Jones. We didn't call him Mr. Jones. We just called him Jones. And he called himself a noticer, by the way. He would say, you know, when God was passing out talents, I didn't have the cool ones. I couldn't swim fast. I couldn't run fast. I couldn't sing well. But I noticed little things that make a difference to people in their lives. And so this old man who said to me, you can't believe everything you think. What he really was saying was that even if you're in first place, don't stop. Because what you know may be true and not be the truth. Mm. All right, now this sounds really odd, right? You want me to unwrap that one for you?
Yeah, absolutely. That's powerful.
Okay. So what that means is think about if you're in first place. Think about if and you're in first place and you're kind of you have struggled to get there, and you've had leaps and bounds through the years. You've had periods of pauses, but you've been on an incline, and sometimes that incline has been steep. Sometimes you have gained 40% in a year, but most times, you know, you were gaining 15%, 20%, and you climbed and you went past competitors, and finally you got to this place. Now you finally, you know, and the past several years, you know, first, second, and third, jockeying for position, you know, it was like 7% here and 9% and 3%, and it's just easy. And finally you're in first place. Well, now you're not looking up anymore. You're looking back at your heels. You are the one everybody's looking at. You are the industry standard. When people talk about best practices in your industry, they look at you because you have done better with those practices than anybody else. Well, you know this too. And so you are now in rare air. There's not a lot of oxygen there. You are definitely the top dog, but there's not a lot of ground to gain in your mind because there's just not any air up there. There's not much more air to breathe. Okay, so here's the thing. When I said just a second ago that what you know may be true but not be the truth, It's one of these little things. I unpack this in the book, but it's one of these little things that is very curious. More people and families and businesses stay where they are and do not accomplish great things because they are living with what is true rather than the truth. See, what is true, it's right, and it works. It actually has a lot of value. It has amazing value. Okay, but the truth is everything. The truth connotes a bottom line. Like if you took a blind person and you said, okay, I'm going to lead you over here to this animal. I know you've never heard of this before, and you've never seen, you know, you've never been able to feel around on one. Nobody's ever described one for you. But this animal, it's called an elephant. And I'm going to give you about 10 minutes with this elephant to do whatever you want, feel around, do whatever. But after, 10, 15, it really take as long as you want. But I want you to come back to me, and I want you to tell me what an elephant is like. And tell me how an elephant could be used. Okay, so after 10, 20, maybe an hour, a blind person may come back to you and say, okay, Doug, an elephant is, it's big, it's very tall, it's very wide, it's flat. It could be used as a certainly a barrier. It could be used as a barrier, maybe a gate, a big gate. You could probably get several of these things together and make a wall. Okay, so what that blind man knows is true. That's true. That's all true. It's just not the truth. It's not the entire picture. Mm-hmm. It's not the foundation. Until he got to the truth of an elephant, he would never have a complete picture of what an elephant really looks like, and he would never be able to harness all the many ways an elephant can be used. And so to get to the truth when you're in first place, to get to more when you're in first place, you can't be looking at your heels. You can't be doing what you're doing. When I work with my clients, and it's funny because my wife asked me, she said, I got off the phone. I was on the phone, last week or a couple of days. I was probably on the phone with Hugh Freeze 15 times. The head coach of Ole Miss, football coach, and he is an awesome man. I just love Hugh Freeze. Great, great guy. And having, problems over there. And I work with Mother Cow, obviously, the last 9 national championship teams. But it's funny to me because my wife looks at me and she says, you don't know anything about football, right? And I said, well, I'm a fan. I'm a fan. She said, but do they know, like, and I said, well, Polly, I don't go in with Nick Saban or Urban Meyer and say, hi, coach, I'm here to help you. I played football in the 6th grade. I said, they probably know that. But in a way, I said, but if you look at the greatest coaches in history, they weren't the greatest players. Mm. I mean, Nick was a defensive back for Kent State. And they weren't the greatest players. And so there's something that they are able to grab. And I said, I'm certainly not full of a lot of football knowledge, so I help them in other ways. And one of the ways that I can help them is to understand that even though you're in first place, there is way more. Because, see, until you understand it, until you really believe it, you really don't have any chance of achieving it. It's just an odd concept. And so let me do this for your listeners, Doug. This will take 120 seconds. Okay. But this is a thing that I developed because I realized that as I was helping more companies – become more successful and helping more coaches. And I was in the past several years, especially I was being called by people who were in first place and second place. And, you know, I mean, for years, I just kind of worked with anybody. And, you know, you can help a lot. Well, we're about to go bankrupt. Just get out there and say anything. It doesn't matter what you say. But when somebody's in first or second or third place, they're up in rare air. They know. I mean, you know, you sit down with Urban Meyer or Nick Saban, I mean, you know, these are good guys, but they're not arrogant, but it's no secret to them that there's nobody in their industry doing better than they have done. And so to be able, the key to me was to figure out how to open their minds to the, not just the possibility, but the absolute understanding that there was way more that they could learn. See, most of society, you don't think that there's way more that you can learn. And so if you don't understand it, you don't believe it, you certainly don't go after it. So here's what it is. And this, I think this is helpful for me every time I do it. And so this will be helpful for your listeners here. So here we go. And this is what I do toward the first of any time with any client. Sometimes I do this with audiences because I want to challenge people to look in a different direction. And ask me about that in a minute, about looking in a different direction. But here we go. Here it is. I can give you good news and bad news in one little phrase. And that phrase is, you know what you know. Now, that's good news because you know a lot. I mean, holy moly, look at what you know. I mean, you have achieved what you have achieved because of what you know. I mean, does anybody know more than you? I don't know if anybody knows more than you know about what you know, and what you know has allowed you to win and to leap to the top of the charts and to be able to produce like you produce. And I mean, holy moly, you know a lot. And so that's good news that you know what you know. Now, it's also bad news you know what you know because you only know what you know. Mm. Now, what I mean by only know what you know, think about this. Have you ever known something? I mean, you knew it, and you could argue it, and you could win the argument every time. And then you found out several months later or a year later, ooh, that was not exactly correct. Mm-hmm. Or you found out, my information was a little incomplete there. Have you ever done that? Well, we've all done that. Okay, if you've ever in your life known something and then found out later your information was incomplete, does the possibility exist that something you know now, your information might be incomplete? And of course you would say, well, Andy, of course.
Are you tired of paying too much for electricity from the former monopolies and getting terrible customer service? Do you really even know how much you're paying per kilowatt? Sometimes they quote you a lower rate, but then add back in the delivery charge. Ugh, how frustrating. Go to electricity.guru, that's right, .guru, for your free analysis. Who knows, with just a few referrals, you could actually earn free electricity. If you're tired of paying outrageous electricity bills, do something about it. Would you like to get a significant discount or even get free electricity? Go to electricity.guru and compare our rates to what you're currently paying. Many of our clients are saving anywhere from 15 to 20%. We also have a referral program that allows you to earn free electricity. Yes, free electricity. And you cannot beat free cents per kilowatt. Award-winning service, competitive rates, and low deposits, if even required. Go to electricity.guru for more details. That's electricity.guru. We offer free energy credits to customers who refer and activate 15 or more qualified customers to our electricity service and are not passed on their bill. To get your free energy credit, your customers must be referred through the free customer gathering website. See electricity.guru for more details.
of course, something I know now, it might not be right, or my information may be incomplete. Of course, something I know now. Okay, I agree. But the point is, we don't know what that is, do we?
No, sir.
And we don't. And we don't know how many topics in your life that may cover. All I'm saying is there is a huge, wide world way beyond everything you know. There's ground you can gain.
Well, I tell you what, there's two or three things I want to highlight real quick, because I've been just taking like notes like crazy on this. And, you know, you talked a little bit earlier about, you know, Jones and him, you know, talking to you and calling you out on stuff. Now, all of us nowadays, we know the Andy Andrews of today that's advising, you know, Nick Saban and these guys. And it's like, oh, my goodness. But, you know, the Andy Andrews back then, you know, was a whole different guy, right? And so when we rewind back and we look at that, you know, the people that are surrounding you, at church the other day, our pastor was talking about how your spouse specifically was put there. They're the person that probably irritates you the most in the world, because you're around them and they know everything about you, and there's nothing that's kind of hidden, if you will. But they're put there to polish off the rough edges. God put them there for a reason, and it may feel annoying, but it's designed to knock off those rough edges, those burrs, to make you better. And people that surround you that just tell you and shoot you straight, as opposed to just placating you or just saying whatever to get along. And it reminds me of a story just a couple of days ago. I had a young man I was talking to, and he and his wife were going through some little struggles, and he was telling me, it was as simple as somebody on Facebook, you know, like, you know, some girlfriend and somebody on Facebook or vice versa or whatever, and his wife was frustrated with that. And he was like, you know, blah, blah, blah. I was like, hey, man, take it easy. It doesn't even matter, man. She's your wife. Just don't friend any girls. It's not a big deal. And I know that sounds petty and crazy, but in this day and age, you know, Facebook and there's all these little things. But his other friends, because he's a pretty influential young man, they may not tell him that kind of stuff, because they're like, oh, whatever, your wife's crazy for thinking that. And I'm like, dude, you're the man of the household. You just need to not do it. It's not a big deal to you. Don't worry about it. But also, you mentioned about, you know, changing thoughts. You knew something was a certain way. You know, Zig Ziglar used to say this. He said that people don't change their mind. They make new decisions with new information. So you have
Hey, Doug.
Yes, sir.
Do you know how he said that?
How's that?
He said, people don't change their minds. They make new decisions with new information.
Oh, my goodness. That's like it gave me chills just now. You know, Zig was pretty close, and a couple of his proteges, I spend time with them all the time. And that was almost identical. I guess you got to kind of be a miss. Now, you're from Alabama, right?
I am, but I know the Ziglar family, and mm-hmm. and actually Tom, Zig's son, mm-hmm. and Cindy and Julie, along with Gene, when Zig was getting a little older, they asked me. I did the audio version of Zig's last book, and I didn't do it in his voice all the time. But there were certain parts of the book that they wanted done in his voice. And so I was able to do that voice and be able to get it down like this.
That is unbelievable. Uncanny how you know, and a lot of people now I'm gonna share this real quick.
And listen, I'm sorry, I took you off a train of thought.
No,
I apologize for that.
No, don't worry about it. It's a great conversation, and this is what we want to have. It and so you know, so it just brings up, though, you gotta have your mind opened to be able to change your mind on things and take in that information. And that was really just the point of it, how, you know, Jones, you know, shares information with you, and you could have gotten mad about it and pouted about it and just, I'm not going to be your friend anymore. Or you listen to it and you know that it's trying to make you a better person. He's not trying to be your quote-unquote friend and do whatever you – just say whatever to keep being your friend. He's telling you the truth about right. what's really going on. And it just kind of puts a nice little bow on what you were saying there. Well, so with Zig, you know, like I said, he had a huge influence on my life, and you know, it's just great information. And I appreciate you sharing that. What I was going to say kind of in addition to that, people know you as this great author, and there's no question about it, but your book, The Traveler's Gift, was actually the first book that I read as an adult that wasn't a business book. One day I was sitting at a of all things at like a little wedding, you know, kind of a after party or whatever, and we were just chatting and somebody was talking to me about books. I was like, yeah, I typically go through, you know, 40-50 books a year, and they were like, really? And I was like, what kind of books do you read? I'm like, I just said, well, I just read business books. And they said, well, you don't read any, like, you know, fiction books? I'm like, fiction? I just want the facts. I just want to read stuff that, you know, that I can get better at. And they said, well, there's this book, and they didn't know the title of it at the time. They said, but it's this book, and it's about how Abraham Lincoln, and it's got these quotes in it, and just all different kind of stuff. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he said, well, a guy gets knocked out, and then he's in a coma. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to research and see what it is you're talking about, and I'll give this thing a try. Well, interestingly enough, the book had been referred to me before. And The Traveler's Gift, you know, goes through this story of a guy that's kind of at the end of his rope and has a car accident and is in a coma. And then he has these encounters or these dreams with different leaders, you know, Michael the Archangel and Abraham Lincoln and Christopher Columbus. And there's all these different people that give him a nugget of information. And when I read that book, it transformed my mind of how to take something that was a fiction-based, you know, book, but it gave, as you say, the truth. It gave the truth about things that you can apply to your life, and it just presented it in a different format. And I have probably, out of all the books other than See at the Top with Zig Ziglar, it's probably the second most book that I've gifted or given away. And I'm telling you right now, just a quick little Doug Parker plug for what it's worth, this is one of the best books, I'll tell you, ever. And I know that it was one of Robin Roberts, her favorite books ever of all time as well. But it is unbelievable, and it's a really cool story Andy talks about in our first episode. You can go back and listen to it, how it almost, you know, really didn't wind up becoming anything. And then before you know it, it was just a bestseller of all time. But with that being said, I do want to transition into the new book, because I really want to hear about it, and I want to know, I know our listeners will want to hear about it, and the differences that the little things, you know, how it can make such a difference. And, you know, when I started listening to it, oh, it's the truth, all right. I mean, there's going to be some things you're listening to, and you may or may not want to hear them, but it's the truth. And you listen to it or you read it, and it gives you some real applicable things that you can go out there and do. And so, you know, one of the questions that I want to get into is this society that we live in, it talks about always everybody's offended by everything. You know, it's this vocal minority, and then the majority can't be offended, or, you know, it's just always about people being offended. Can you talk a little bit about that and how your book addresses it?
Yeah. And you know, the name of the book is The Little Things, Why You Really Should Sweat the Small Stuff. And the whole concept and the reason the offended stuff and everything fits in there is because we have increasingly become a society that has really shifted toward thinking big. We think big. We think, you know, and we want to hire people who have the big picture, and we want to follow people who have the big picture, and and we don't really, you know, in our society, we don't value, like we used to, the people who really deal with the little things. I guess, you know, it's kind of an odd thought process to think, you know, you have somebody say, "Give me a 20,000 square foot house, just put it right there," and yet this guy has absolutely no idea that it's one brick at a time. You know, it's and so in a world where we're increasingly thinking about the big picture, big pictures are made up of little things. You know, when Leonardo da Vinci painted the Mona Lisa, he used the smallest paintbrush available at the time. It was just tiny. And the reason, when somebody asks why, you know, why he was using that because it looked ridiculous because he wasn't able to go fast. He wasn't able to get it done. And he said, I'm creating a masterpiece. Well, it was, you know, it was, it still is. And today, if you go to the Louvre and look at the Mona Lisa with a magnifying glass, you cannot discern individual brushstrokes. It was done that well. And so the idea is, what are you creating with your life, with your business, with your family? What are you creating? Because something's being done. And at the end of it all, whether you have created a masterpiece or a disaster, it will have been done one moment at a time, one decision at a time, one choice at a time, one tiny brushstroke at a time. And so when you hear people say, don't sweat the small stuff, to yourself, you think, I'm going to, okay? And so there are tiny things that people try to navigate in between that start to derail our society. And Doug, you specifically ask about the offense thing. There is a, the chapters in the book are very interesting to me. I hope to everybody else. I wrote the book because over the past several years, I realized I was helping some people do some amazing things. One company that 19 years to $5.4 billion in business, I started working with them, and in a year, they went from 5 to $11 billion, and then the next year to $17 billion. And it was just tiny little shifts. It was just tiny little things. And I realized one day when my wife was asking me that about the coaches, I realized that a lot of the stuff that I had done to help some of these people, none of it was written down. It was just in my head. And I broke out in a cold sweat because I'm kind of an old dad. You know, I'm 57, and my wife and I have a 14-year-old and a 17-year-old. And I thought, man, if I croak today, my boys will grow up and never know how this happened, how to do it, how to harness it in their own lives. So I started writing just these little things. And you know, for the most part, Doug, you know, I write stories. I write fiction books with principles ingrained in them. And you mentioned before that that you only read, you know, nonfiction books. You wanted the facts. And for a long time, I guess I would go through periods of doing that too. And I finally realized why I believe we need a combination of both. I think we need to read both fiction and nonfiction. And here's why. I think that with nonfiction, we can get straight, clear information. But fiction will fire your imagination in ways that the facts cannot. Fiction will fire that imagination and begin to fire these creative juices in you. And so here's the thing. You can learn all the facts in the world, and you can use them like everybody else is using them, but you'll never get tremendous value from those facts unless you have enough imagination to use those facts in the nooks and crannies of your life and to use them in little areas of your life that make big, huge, gigantic leaps. And so, you know, the chapters of this book, I ended up writing like a little thing like a one, a little thing like a few nails. This is a story of Napoleon, a little thing like a 16th of an inch, a little thing like quitting. A little thing like an increase, a little thing like the other end of the banana, a little thing like taking an offense, which you mentioned. And the taking offense, you know, people look at our society today and we try to navigate around this. And yet it is in our face. It is a little thing that's taking us down. It's And the odd thing about taking offense is it's totally, you know, totally within our control, right? I mean, it's like it's totally within right in front of us. And the whole point of it that is very odd is that in the scheme of life, things don't get much smaller than this, because we can choose to be offended, and we can choose not to be offended. I mean, it really is that simple. It's not that easy necessarily, but it is that simple. It's a choice within our control. We can choose to be upset, or we can choose not to be upset. We can choose to hold a grudge. We can choose not to hold a grudge. And so we see people out there, and that's us. Now, how do we deal with these other people? Well, we see people out there all the time, and they're offended by everything. And it's like, what I believe is just as valid. I am entitled to my own opinion. I am entitled to my own opinion. And I want to say, yeah, you are entitled to your own opinion. But you're not entitled to your own facts.
You got to dive into that a little deeper.
Yeah, well, you know, people believe that because they have an opinion, that they're entitled to airtime. That they're entitled to because they have a different opinion, that you have to stop and listen to them. And you have to take your time, or you have to treat them, you treat their opinion with equal weight as anybody else's. And it's just, it's collapsing our society because, and here's why, because we are tolerant. Now here's what I'm saying. You and I, Doug, I hope I'm one of them. We're fairly reasonable people, and as reasonable people, we're inquisitive, and we're also tolerant. And toleration lasts to a point.
This is Doug Parker, and I have been working with loan officers for over two decades. And if you're looking for a new mortgage, I want to introduce you to Jeff Janash. He's with Town Square Mortgage. This guy's got programs for every situation, whether you're self-employed, you need down payment assistance, a cash out refinance for debt consolidation. They can even do jumbo loans with 10% down. Rates are very competitive. Their service exceeds expectations. They're two-time five-star professional award winner. Very quick turnarounds. They can actually get loans closed in 3 weeks. A great program to be part of if you want to get in, get out, don't want to play a bunch of games. These guys are here local and can take really good care of you. I've known Jeff for many, many years, and he's actually available after hours. Give Jeff Janash a call, 972-292-7599, or you can go to tsmlending.com. That's tsmlending.com. T like town, S for square, M for mortgage, lending.com. Town Square Mortgage, 17300 Dallas Parkway, Suite 1030, Dallas, Texas, 75248. NMLS ID 169224.
Okay, you tolerate something until it becomes dangerous. You tolerate something until it no longer captures your attention. You tolerate something until it wastes your time. You tolerate something until it is no longer in for the best of the community or whatever. But my point is that most of us are very, very tolerant. And yet, we are often told we are not tolerant, that we're not tolerant. And we are told that we are not tolerant by people who are the most intolerant people that you'll ever see. See, being tolerant doesn't mean that I have to agree with everything you say. Being tolerant does not mean that I have to allow you being tolerant does not mean that I have to allow your words equal weight with other words. Okay? See, you know, if I got some guy who believed that trees talk to each other, and that, you know, trees have souls and they have spirits, and a tree is just, it's, there's no difference in you and a tree. You know, a tree is, it's one of the living creatures on planet Earth, and trees talk to each other, trees have babies, and trees grow old, and just like we, and you know, if somebody believes that, then, you know, fine, I don't care. I mean, go believe whatever you want. Okay, now, unless that person demands that because they believe that, I cannot trim my shrubbery on my own land, that I can't harvest timber. And so see the challenge, and man, you know, that's just one rabbit trail that I could go down because of just the tree thing. See, there is an odd thing as we begin to see. You know, as we begin to delve into ourselves and see, you know, people didn't. You say, why is this offended thing? Why is this kind of a new thing? And by the way, that's chapter 3 in the book. I saw a review of this book, The Little Things, Why You Really Should Sweat the Small Stuff. I saw a review the other day that said that chapter 3 of The Little Things should be printed on a full page op-ed on every newspaper in America. And it, because this kind of thinking destroys everything that we're about. I mean, just consider the tree thing. Just consider the tree thing for a second. You know, there are people who, and now think about this, they love the deer, they love the animals, they love the rabbits. Now, and I'm saying that in kind of a sarcastic way, because I love the deer too. I love the animals. I'm an outdoor person. I love all that stuff. But there are people who love those so much, and they love nature, and so they will not allow, see, no longer are we allowing our national forests to be logged. You know, the national forest, that's off limits for lumber companies, and so nobody can touch a tree in a national forest. Now, curiously, people don't realize this, but our national forests are increasingly becoming pretty barren of deer and little bunnies and this kind of stuff. I mean, it is a reduction in numbers, and here's why. When trees are allowed to grow unchecked, one of the most beautiful things that you can walk into is an area of woods that has nothing but massive trees. It's one of the most beautiful things you can see, because you walk in and you can just see forever. You can just see through these trees. You can walk without going through stickers or going through brush or anything, because the canopy of these trees keep the sun from hitting the ground, and they keep other things from growing. It's such a beautiful area, but there's no food. Deer are browse animals. There's no food. There's no cover, there's no bedding area, and so they go somewhere else, and their numbers reduce because of the lack of food. Now, when, you know, as bad as a clear cut looks, a lot of people have begun, you know, hunters. I mean, who cares about deer more than hunters? It sounds kind of odd, but hunters love deer more than anybody else. They mandate that their license fees go into management for deer, into conservation for deer. They pay the money for the deer. I mean, if a hunter buys 1,000 acres, you think he's not taking care of those deer? I mean, he wants the deer. And so hunters have learned that as pretty as those places are, that if you want a lot of animals, there has to be a balance in those big trees. And then you clear cut an area, or you select cut trees so that the sunlight can hit the ground. Because when the sunlight hits the ground, within days, literally within a week, there's green stuff coming up out of the ground. And so clear cuts become these tangle of honeysuckle vines and blackberry vines and all this growth that the deer eat and the rabbits eat and the birds eat. And so by balancing that, you know, so it's odd to me that by somebody loving trees and loving deer, they can do the worst for both of them, because, you know, what I know is true. What I know is true. I love the trees. Yeah. But what you know is not the truth. Okay. So the offense thing, it's just a feeling. And we have a society who has become obsessed with how people feel, and nothing is less important than how you feel. You know, to raise your children or to live in our society thinking that feelings are the deal, it's very dangerous, because nothing's less important. You know, from the time you were a little kid, Doug, no good thing ever happened to you because of how you felt. Every good thing that ever happened to you happened because of how you acted, what you did. You know, every girl who liked you growing up, it wasn't how you felt. Every teacher who gave you the benefit of the doubt. I mean, was there ever a teacher who said, "Oh, well, can't give them C's anymore because it just makes everybody feel so bad. We're just going to have to give them A's."
Well, not when I was growing up, but I hear that some of that is going on in this day and age.
Yeah, right. But you know what I'm saying. I mean, did your parents say, "Well, we can't punish him. It makes him feel bad." Yeah. When you got to be an adult, did you ever interview for a job where somebody said, "Okay, if I give you the job, how are you going to feel?" Nobody cares.
Right.
Nobody cares. And this, if you unpack it all the way, if you say manners are important, well, that's true. But the truth is much deeper, okay? The truth about why manners are important is because nobody really cares how you feel. If you want to separate your child and prepare this child for a wonderful life, then you make sure this child has exceptional manners. Because, and I want you to think with me here, if people say, "Well, I just want to raise great children." Well, okay, that's true. That's true. It's not the truth, because what you really want to do, I mean, it's true. You want to have great children. You want to have great children, right? You want to have great children. But that's true. But it can't be the end of it, because we all know people who they had great children. And then something happened when they turned 18 and got away from mom and dad. Something happened. What happened to them? I mean, they were at church every Wednesday night. They were at church every Sunday. They never drank. They never smoked. They never did drugs. And then they turned 18, get away from their parents, and just went nuts. And that was a great kid. Okay? Well, so our goal cannot be to raise great kids. Our goal has to be to raise kids who become great adults. That's a different pathway. It's a different pathway. It leads to a different destination. And now that second destination, to raise kids who become great adults, they will be great kids along the way. Okay, but you've got a longer destination, or you got a different destination there, and that requires the thinking part of it. Not just to tell a kid what to think, but to explain why. You know, the manners thing. The manners is not that I'm just going to make you do this. It's not that I'm going to make you stand up when your mother walks to the table. It's not that I'm going to make you just hold the door for somebody. And it's not going to make you say, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. Here's why I am doing this. Because I'm trying to raise a kid who's going to be a great adult. I want you to grow up, and when you get into the field of corporate combat, I want you to win every time. And a 5-year-old who grows into a 25-year-old with exceptional manners has many more opportunities than a 5-year-old who grows into a 25-year-old with average manners. And so, you know, if you look at something as silly as wearing the hat backwards around town as a teenager, you know, is that wrong? No, I don't guess. I mean, is it a sin? No, it's not a sin. Wearing the hat backwards, it's not a sin. Is that a sin? No, it's an opinion. However, if it doesn't matter to you, we know the reality is that 20, 25, 30% of the people 40 years old and greater in America, the people who hire and fire in America, they don't like that look. They think it looks disrespectful. And so unless you're covering up some cancer scar on your neck, unless you have a reason for doing it, you know, if it's just an opinion, as their opinion, then I'm going to explain to my kid that we're not going to run around with our hats backwards because people see that and they think whatever they think, and whatever they think, I can't control that. But when you get out into the world and you are wanting letters of reference and you're wanting recommendations and you're interviewing for jobs, I want 100% of the people to have a positive view of you. And when you go up against another kid who people have watched for years and only 70% have a positive view of him, you get the job.
You know, Andy, there's two things I want to kind of hit on as we, because we're getting close to wrapping up the show, and I know how valuable your time is and how tight of a schedule you're on. I could talk to you forever, literally probably, but I want to hit on, you know, what you were just kind of driving home there. You know, you're talking about the hat being backwards or the shirt being tucked in or the pants up on your hips instead of, you know, halfway down your backside. You know, it's all those little things, and, you know, I'm kind of old school in that thinking. You know, I'm the kind of suit and tie everyday kind of guy, not because I have to, but because, you know, when I'm out and about, I want to look sharp. I want every opportunity that I can possibly get. And, you know, there's the difference between first and second place. And I know you talked a little bit about some of that. I know you go into it in depth in the book, but it's these minuscule little tiny differences between first and second place, or even first and 10th place. But the rewards for the higher placement are astronomical. And so I think you alluded to some of the things with Michael Phelps and one of the swimming races that he won by, I think, like a hundredth of a second. But yet, you know, no, I don't even know who's second. I don't even know any other swimmers, to be honest with you, other than Michael Phelps. But I know his name. And you know, and he's got all these millions of dollars in rewards because he was 100th of a second faster in that particular race. And I think you said it was like that's the flutter of a hummingbird's wings or something. The time,
yeah, I mean, yeah. 100th of a second is less than the time it takes to flap a hummingbird's wing one time. One 100th of a second is less than the time it takes to blink your eye. It's less than a bolt of lightning, and the curious thing, and I guess we kind of close with this, but the curious thing, Doug, that you're hitting on is that you and I live our lives that way, whether we acknowledge it or not. These little things matter, whether we acknowledge them or not. They are taking place in our lives. And see, you know, you and I are a lot alike, and I can't think of a lot of other swimmers either. But you think of Olympians as a whole. There's a bunch of Olympians that have won 3 and 4 and 5 gold medals. See, the only reason we really know Michael Phelps, the only reason the media got on him and that we all know him, is because he went into those Olympics, the Beijing Olympics, with the opportunity to win 8 gold medals. And he did. He won 8 gold medals. And the reason that was a big deal is because the previous record was 7, held by Mark Spitz, a swimmer. And so if he had only won 7 or if he'd won 6, we wouldn't really know him. Because curiously, I mean, the guy has probably 15 or something. He's won gold medals in other Olympics too. Nobody really thinks it talks about it. But the reason we know him is because he won 8 in that one. And you could make a case that the one that put him over was the one that he won by 1/100th of a second. Now, here's the curious thing. Where did that 1/100th of a second come from? Where did he shave that off his time? Was it an extra swallow of coffee that morning at breakfast? Was it 5 more minutes of sleep the day before? Was it a positive thought as he was at this, you know, on the starting block? Let me ask you this. You know, scientists have proven now that thought has mass. Okay, so knowing that they are getting rid of mass, you know, that swimmers need, I mean, swimmers shave the hair off their legs. They're trying to decrease their mass. Could the lack of a negative thought in the middle of the race, I mean, think about it. Just one little, oh no, in the middle of the race, could that have produced 2/100ths of a second that would have put Phelps in second place? See, everything is critical, and you're right. He got me. I mean, for winning that race, Speedo, his sponsor, handed him a check for $1 million for winning that race. Now, to his credit, he promptly turned around and gave it to charity, which was awesome. Okay, but the point is, there is a massive difference, and it ain't just Phelps. It's your family. It's my family. It's your child. It's my child. It's your business. It's your future.
Mm-mm-mm. Well, I'll tell you what, Andy. I am so appreciative of your time investing in our listeners. I know how busy you are, and I'm honored to have had you on the show. And I kind of want to just kind of close out here by again talking about the book, The Little Things, why you really should sweat the small stuff. We hear about don't sweat the small stuff. Well, I agree with you 100%, Andy. You have to sweat the small stuff. You got to pay attention to the little things. It makes a huge difference. And as always, the Traveler's Gift, I mean, if you haven't read that book, I promise you, you are missing out, listeners. You need to get it right now, but also get The Little Things. And I can't wait to just to see the success of this book and read the entire book and go through that. And again, if you want to get the first 3 chapters and listen to those, you can text the word little to 33444, and it'll kind of give you a little text opt-in thing to get those to listen to. Andy, thank you so much, sir.
Buddy, thank you. I always love talking to you, Doug. And yeah, I hope you do get those 3 chapters, or just go on Amazon. The book, you know, you can get a hardback book less than $10. And so it's The Little Things, Why You Really Should Sweat the Small Stuff. But dude, get the audio thing too. Get the, you know, as Doug said, I know that doesn't sound like a text number, but it's 33444. And in the message window, just put the word little, LITTLE. That's all you do.
Well, Andy, it's the little things that make all the difference. Thank you for coming on our little show compared to Robin Roberts or Glenn Beck. We do appreciate it so much. You have a fantastic time. Safe travels, and look forward to seeing you soon.
Hey, buddy, I have as much fun talking to you as I do anybody, and I have more fun talking to you than most of them.
We'd like to say a special thanks to our sponsors, Ambitious Radio. Could not do it without you. Tune in Saturdays to Ambitious Radio, where we interview thought leaders and exciting entrepreneurs changing the faces of their organizations. Remember, you can make money or you can make excuses, but you cannot make both. So go out there and be ambitious.
Thank you for listening to the Ambitious Radio Network, hosted by serial entrepreneur Doug Parker. Join us weekly as we have engaging conversations with ambitious entrepreneurs and thought leaders on topics that can be applied immediately after listening. Like what you've heard? Listen to other interviews at ambitiousradio.com or subscribe on iTunes.